Good morning, listeners. We have a very special treat for you. Our good friend Cable Flame is going to reprise her fireside chat. So I'm going to get out of the way and let her do the talking.
Good morning, Internet. It is 8:04-ish, and you are listening to Fireside Chat with Cable Flame. This year, I think I'm going to talk. I'm sitting here. I'm seeing the IRC feed. I'm going to let you guys talk to me if you'd like, and help guide this, because I'm not a morning person, but I decided to be kind enough to fill in the morning slot for people, because I knew that probably they'd have a hard time finding morning slot people. So, little about myself, in case you don't know me already. I seem to be a little infamous at this con. I have been in the hacker scene for about 10 years. I'm known more as a non-tech hacker than a tech hacker. Some of you may have known me as the person who talked about sex at The Last Hope. That was me. I gave the presentation on sexuality. That's one of my big things. I've been coming to Hope for 10 years now, and this is my 10th anniversary. Going to Hope, I was 22 when I started. I'm 32 now. I'm feeling it. And there's been lots of changes in the world since then. There's been lots of changes in my life since then. Some good, some bad. But, you know, 10 years later, I'm still here. And I think maybe I want to, you know, look back a bit on those 10 years and think back and answer people's questions and talk about, you know, what's it like 10 years later for anybody who's curious, or if anybody else has a lot more years under their belt, I'd definitely be interested in seeing what they have to say about, you know, being in the hacker scene over a long period of time. So, So my first Hope was the fifth Hope. And I was, as I said earlier, I was 22. I got involved in the hacker scene through a friend at University of Maryland in College Park. I didn't actually formally attend there. It was what we called an unstudent. I basically hung out on campus, snuck into classes, and attended clubs without formally enrolling or paying any money to the school, because, you know, I had nothing better else to do at the time. And so I had a lot of friends, and I actually did live on campus for a period with my boyfriend at the time, who is actually at this con. Probably not right now, he's probably at home sleeping. But I lived on campus, and I was part of a group. I was pretty much into a pretty far left liberal activism back in those days. And I was part of a group called Maryland Action Collective that was not an official campus group, because they wanted to be able to take direct action if they chose, which basically means, you know, breaking the law. I never did that, but I met some cool folks from this group that I hung out with, and one of them went to 2600 meetings. And I was really curious about the hacker scene in 2600, so I decided to go to a meeting with him. Now, for some reason, instead of going to the Washington, D.C. meeting, he always went to the Baltimore meeting, which is about an hour and a half from D.C. Excuse me. And so we piled in his van and went to a meeting on one of the first Fridays, and it was really cool, and there were neat people, and there was neat stuff, and this one guy brought some phone freaking things, and that was pretty neat. And I don't remember when exactly my first meeting was, but I'm guessing it was probably 2003, and people were telling me about this cool thing called Hope. And I'm like, oh, that sounds really, really cool. I want to go to that. So by the time Hope rolled around, I was dating someone in the scene by then, which, you know, has its own perils and pitfalls. When you're, you know, basically seen and passed as a woman, there's a lot of, oh, well, maybe she's just a scene whore type thing, which is really, really frustrating. But I was dating someone, and we went to Hope together with some of our friends, and he and I, we stayed with each other. And it was kind of towards the end of our relationship, but that was okay. And I The Fifth Hope was really cool. It had a Big Brother theme to it. And the badges that year were armbands, like proletariat party armbands. And it was pretty cool. I see. Is that better? Can you hear me better now? Thank you very much. So, you know, there were like kind of proletariat armbands, and there was all these Big Brother stuff up everywhere. And I'm not going to lie, like the big pictures of Big Brother watching you were definitely intimidating. I was kind of freaked out by them. And it's funny, is the Big Brother is watching you. They have one right now in the mezzanine, right? As you get off the escalator at the top of the hall, and that it doesn't freak me out as much nowadays, but it's still a little freaky. I mean, back then we were doing a lot of activism, and there was a lot of, you know, I mean, there was the whole war thing. There was a lot of stuff going on at the time, or maybe it was just more. I was more politically involved at the time, so the Big Brother theme seemed more. Is prescient the word? I think prescient's the word. It seems more pressing. It was more real, and it was a lot scarier. I'm not gonna lie. I mean, I remember back then I tried reading 1984 again, because I started reading in high school, knowing what it was very surprised by the love story in the center of it. Wasn't expecting a love story in the middle of 1984. Excuse me. And it was there, and I enjoyed it so much that by the time it got to the point where he got taken away, I just stopped reading, because I'm like, oh, too sad, can't read anymore. But back when all that stuff was going down, the Gulf War and Wreck 2 and all that, I tried reading it again, and I just couldn't. I just saw way too many parallels in society. So to have this, you know, omnipresent as at Hope was, one, it's kind of ironic the name was Hope, but having all those things omnipresent. And two, having those omnipresent as Hope was a bit jarring, was a bit of a surprise, too much of a reminder almost. But, you know, we thought ourselves the good guys. We thought ourselves, you know, the thought criminals. Which, you know, who knows? Are we? Aren't we? I don't know. But I had a really great time, and I met a lot of cool people. And some of those people I'm still good friends with today. And one of those people I met was Rupti Firefly. And this was back when, I don't remember if he might have just been a volunteer at the time, or just wasn't really doing anything with Con, but I met him. And we stayed in touch on LiveJournal, which was the big thing at the time. I also met a bunch of other people I'm not really in touch with anymore, like Irish Masms, and I miss him. And if you're out there, you should drop me an email and tell me what's going on in your life. But Rob and I stayed kind of in touch on LiveJournal, and next year when GLBT Pride rolled around, I put a call out on my LiveJournal and like, hey, anyone want to come to Pride? You're welcome to come crash with me. And he replies in my live journal, I'd love to. How about I be your token straight guy? I'm like, that sounds like fun. You come and be the token straight guy. And so he came, and we had an amazing time at Pride. And it was just so much fun. And that's kind of how I became friends with Rob. And throughout the years, he's always been there for me. He's always been a good friend, someone I can talk to. At one point, I lived in Toronto, and I didn't have many friends. I was up there because of my boyfriend. I didn't have that many friends outside of it. And I ended up making one friend up there, Bill. Hi, Bill. Miss you. But Rob was there, and it was cool. And it's been really interesting being friends with Rob, because, I mean, anyone who knows this con and her knows Off the Hook knows, yeah, that's the same Rob T. Firefly. So, like, my friend became famous kind of underneath me in certain communities, and it's kind of funny because I'll be talking, I'll be like, blah, 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 Rob T. Firefly, blah, 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 blah. They're like, you know Rob T. Firefly? And it's like, oh, that's right, he's kind of famous now, like a thing, which is kind of funny to me, because to me, he's just Rob. But, so I actually met him at that Hope, and so we're going to be celebrating our 10th anniversary of being friends. We're going to buy a little cake and a little bit of, like, non-alcoholic bubbly, because he doesn't drink, and, you know, we're going to have a little party, and, you know, whoever wants to join in that can join in that. But, you know, I'm really excited about that. And, I mean, you have those kind of friends that just, it doesn't matter how much time has passed, it doesn't matter how little you've talked to them, that, you know, it can be, like, 6 months, and you haven't talked to them at all, and then you show up at the con, and there they are. and you just pick up right where you left off. RTF is one of the nicest people I have ever met in my entire life, and I have gotten around the world quite a bit. So let me tell you, Rub T Firefly, terrifically nice person, very sweet. Isn't afraid to, like, you know, be completely honest, though. And if he doesn't agree with you, he'll tell you he doesn't agree with you. But that's okay. You know, I want that from a friend. I respect that from a friend. He's sweet and caring and kind and lovable, a doll. We love Rob. He's wonderful. But, yeah, I met Rob at That Hope. And the crowd I was hanging with at the time, I'm not really in touch with anymore. They had a meetup last fall, actually, a lot of the old people. And I went, but I was in a really bad place emotionally that day. I don't know if anybody knows out there. I have mental illness. I'll probably talk a little bit more about that, because I talked about that in my last talk, and I have updates, lots of updates since then. But so I was having a really bad, emotionally bad mental illness day that day, and I bailed early. I just could not handle it. And so, unfortunately, I didn't get as much time to talk to the old Maryland 2600 crew. And shouts out to all you guys. Hope you're doing okay. I wonder if anyone, maybe Lady Nikon's here. I could totally see her being here. But then again, you know, all the kids. Jeez, kids. That's kids. It's kind of awesome. No one ever told us we were going to have kids. And some of us got married and stuff. It's kind of weird. I don't think a lot of us expected to be toddling around the con with toddlers and stuff. But I think it's terrific. I'm not. But, you know, others are. And that's so cool. You know, bring up the next generation, right? So my favorite hope of all of the hopes that I've ever been to, I guess I'd have to say was the Last Hope. All of them up till then have been amazing. Since then, I don't know, the Last Hope had a really weird vibe for me, and it had a really weird vibe for a lot of other people. Not saying it wasn't good, just, you know, maybe it was personal things in my life. And then after that was, what hope was after the next hope? I think that was the previous hope to now? Yes? Maybe? Yeah. I got my person here looking it up for me. If anybody out there on IRC note could tell me which hope is after the next hope, if was that hope number 9, please let me know. That would be really nice. But that hope was challenging for me. That actually was the first hope I had my fireside talk with, and I just kind of rambled for an hour. Hopefully, you know, you all found me interesting. I'll give you a few updates from there. Oh, cool. There's a whole Wikipedia page on hope. Ooh. The last hope, the next hope. Yes, that was hope number 9. Okay, yeah. So that one was rough for me because, you know, we didn't know at the time, but we know now the psych meds that I was on was making me far worse than I would have been otherwise. Actually, after that conference, I went home. I actually ended up having a breakdown and had to go to a psych facility for a little bit, and to get me off those meds and onto different ones, which was its own process of then going, and I'm hypersensitive to psych meds. I cannot take the dose that everybody else takes. I have to take a quarter of the starting dose, and even that sometimes is way too much. So it's a very difficult process, especially because for years I was misdiagnosed, or they knew what was wrong with me and they wouldn't tell me because my diagnosis is one of the most stigmatized in the mental health community. But one of the things that has happened to me since the previous hope was that I finally got my diagnosis, and I'll be more than happy to say it because, you know, fuck stigma. I mean, stigma helps no one. The only people stigma helps is people who want to make other people feel bad and who want to bring themselves up by lowering other people. And, you know, fuck that noise. There's no place for that in the world. I was finally diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. I could not be happier to be diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. I'm like the only one who is. Not because, you know, I mean, it's a really difficult diagnosis, but I know what's wrong with me now. Like, there's a name for it and a word for it and a set of symptoms, and I can look at websites about it. I can read books about it. I can send books to my friends and my lovers and be like, here, read this. This will help you deal with me better. And you know, now we know where my crazy comes from. And it makes such a huge difference. We're not throwing meds at me. You know, one of the things, borderline personality disorder, because it's a personality disorder, doesn't usually respond to medication. So we can stop trying to throw meds at this thing that doesn't respond to meds. And I'm very sensitive to the side effects of psych meds, to the point that they mess me up far more than most people. And so we could stop playing that game. I mean, if we want to, we can, but we could stop playing it. We could stop pretending like I have bipolar disorder, because I don't fit the symptoms and I never did. And I tried for years to try to, quote, accept in myself that I'm bipolar, and it just never felt right. And now I know why, because I'm not. Now, you know, I have two therapists and a psychiatrist. Some of my therapists don't completely throw that one out. The one who diagnosed with BPD does completely throw that one out. So, you know, who knows? How do you ever know this stuff in the end? There's not like there's any clear test or anything, but it's been ever since last fall I got diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, and I was finally told that I have it. My life has changed so much for the better, because I can read websites, and I do, and I look things up, and I pass on information to the people I care about, and we can figure out what to do with it now. We can know what to do with it. And I mean, that's a big difference from, you know, Hope Number 9, is that, I mean, when I was at Hope Number 9, I was having my really good friend at the time basically had to be my, human support animal, but not animal person. And basically, he spent the whole Hope taking care of me, because these meds had made me so messed up. And, you know, I'm very grateful to him. And, you know, to this day, I'll, you know, say, you know, thanks, 8 Tons, for, like, that's his Twitter handle, for doing that for me. That was very kind of him. Something happened in our friendship, he did something pretty awful, and he's really going to tell people this, and I had to basically cut him out of my life completely. And I did that back in May, and last night was the first time I saw him since then. And it wasn't easy. In fact, it was really hard. I mean, there's something about Hope. There's something about, I mean, when you're in the hacker community, it's, especially when you've been in it for 10 years and, you know, the people that you live with and love are part of this community. I mean, everyone's like, oh, don't bring the drama to the con. But, you know, I mean, there's a certain amount of, that's where I saw him next. And, you know, we went out and we had Korean food because, hey, K-Town. And we talked, and it was good to talk to him again, but I still am at the point where I'm just not quite ready for full contact with him yet, but that's okay. So, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, there's nothing much you can do. I'm glad we intentionally bumped into each other so I wouldn't feel to take the entire con and feel like I had to avoid him the whole con now. You know, I don't have to, which is good. And I have a new sweetie who isn't here right now. Vanishing Vision, love, I miss your coffee. Why are you not here giving me your coffee? I need your coffee. Shouts out, babe. But, I mean, you know, he's supposed to be here. He knows he's the one who helped me through my ex. And he was glad I got to see him last night and has been a wonderful support. So you live, you learn, you move on. And you just keep trying to take the punches as you can. But I was talking about my hopes, sorry. I kind of rambled off there for a bit. The last Hope was probably my favorite of all of them. That happened to be the one I spoke at. That's not why it's my favorite, but I don't know, there's a certain level of that. To those of you who don't know, I gave a talk. I don't remember the exact name of it right now, but it was something about, I think it was Hacking the Mind, Hacking the Body Pleasure. I spoke about sexuality, BDSM fetishes, erotic hypnosis, sacred sexuality, techno sex stuff for like 45 minutes, I think it was, maybe an hour. And we packed, I think, the room that's what, Olson, I think it is, not the smallest room, the second smallest room, maybe Olson, I think it is. But we packed it to capacity. Years later, I went back and I looked in that room to see what that capacity was. I think it was like 540. So, it's funny because I also present in the alternative sexuality scene. And when I talk in that scene, you know, I'm lucky if my classes, because I teach very specialist classes, I'm lucky if they draw 10 people. But The Last Hope was my first main talk. And it was 540 plus people. And then after that, the Q&A was so popular that that ran, that was like an hour and a half, and that ran over capacity. And then there were still people coming up to me after that asking me questions. And, you know, 4 or 5 hours later, I'm still talking about sex, and people are like, you know, at this point, you're down to the stragglers who just want to ask you questions one-on-one because there are people who are very private about it, and that's okay, and I'm okay with answering those. But at that point, I'm like, all right, if you want me to talk to you and answer questions, you're going to have to walk with me and buy me a damn Big Mac because I'm hungry, and it is like 3 a.m., and I've been talking about sex since 10, so what's really crazy about that is still to this day, I occasionally get emails. I still get emails about that. And people being like, hey, and I still get stopped in the hallways at con being like, you're that sex chick. You're that chick who talked about sex. It's like, okay, there's more to be than that, but that is accurate. I'm not gonna lie. Someone here says, Fuso says, I remember the sex talk. I must have done it in the MP at the time. Yeah. Somebody put it up on YouTube, and I'm really glad they did because I don't have that like video knowledge. So I'm like, thank you for ripping it and putting it on YouTube because I didn't know how. So whoever did that, thank you. And it's still on YouTube. You can watch it. And it's interesting going back and watching it again. I hate watching myself. I do this little dancey thing because I'm nervous, and I don't think I'm very professional up there. Part of the problem was, when you present up there, it's just the lights in your eyes. It's a dark room with spotlights on you. And so I'm used to seeing my audience. I'm used to making eye contact with them. I'm used to talking to them almost directly because 2 years before, I actually presented on sex in the informal track, and it was so popular. I'm like, well, let me try it in the formal track this time. And there seems to be something, I mean, in society, there's this, you know, there's such a dearth of good sexual information that hackers and society as a whole, but hackers especially, just crave the knowledge. And, oh, someone says they think that the thing was ripped by 20th Century Magazine. I don't think it was, but I could be wrong. It was. Oh, excellent. It is on the official 20th Century channel. Thank you, 2600. I appreciate it. But there's just this, people are starving for sex knowledge, and it's why I think to this day people still come up to me and ask me questions, or why I'll still get emails with people being like, so I know you talked about sex at this hope, I got this problem, and I'm, you know, I try to answer all the questions that I can, but people are so curious about this, and there aren't that many good sources. I'll give you one source. It's made for teens and young adults, but the information that they have is just, it's unparalleled. And when if I need sexual information, and this is where I go, it's Scarletteen. That's Scarle, I think it's only one TEEN.com. It was done by a woman named Heather Corinna, and I think he's about to type this in the channel with the URL for that. And it's done by a woman named Heather Corinna, who actually writes like feminist erotica. And what would happen is, kids would come to her site desperately seeking sex knowledge, and she couldn't, there was no good site she could point them to because, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, they were like, we're starved for knowledge, and she wanted to make sure that where she pointed them to was accurate and safe and basically, you know, just up to date, and there wasn't anything that she could have, so. So she went and she created Scarletteen, which, hold on a second, because I can't talk and type at the same time. As I type, see if it comes up here. Yep, Scarletteen, Scarletteen.com? Yeah, com, there we go. And yeah, it's, if I need a refresher, usually on like the specifics of STDs, because I don't remember all of that stuff. And, that's where I go. It's good stuff. And I'm excited to see somebody else is talking about sex today. Yes, somebody else is talking about sex. Everybody thinks if anything has to do with sex at this con, that it's me doing it. There was an exhibit that year, an art exhibit with all these dildos being made into flowers and stuff. And people automatically assume that I did it because I'm the person who does sex stuff. And it's like, actually, I didn't make that. I don't know who did. I, you know, kudos to whoever did make it. It outgassed really bad because they're usually cheap sex toys, and the stench of the plastic was pretty strong. Made some people sick. But yeah, it's been an interesting ride. I mean, the hacker community was the first community I was in. And then I moved over to the alternative sexuality community. It'll be 10 years next year, where I entered into the BDSM scene. And I've been in there ever since. My involvement in the hacker community is pretty low. I mainly just go to the cons and see my friends at this point. But there are parts of the hacker community that have stayed with me. And my sweetie, Vanishing Vision, was asking me the other day, because he's not a part of the hacker community, although he definitely has, he has the spirit in his heart, because we were talking about that. He was asking me about the differences between the hacker community and the kink community. And I said that one of the major differences that I found is the access to information and the transparency. So hackers are a bunch of people who are misunderstood and are disliked by society and are seen as criminals. And the way that they deal with the stigma, back to stigma again, is that they are completely open about who that is, who they are, and what they do. They hold their conferences in public. They say, here's our conference, and here's where it is. And if you have a problem with us, come to our conference and see what we're all about. They are open-minded. Well, that's okay. The community's pretty open-minded, too. They record, the hacker community records their talks and gives them away freely online. The hacker community, now I noticed this year there's a picture policy that you're not taking pictures without people's consent. And I have mixed feelings. I respect it. I get it in the end, and I'm okay with it, but I do have some mixed feelings on it, I'll be completely honest. But in the end, people's, you know, I suppose people's privacy is paramount, but I find that slippery slope, because the slippery slope towards what I see in the kink community. And so the hacker community is very, this is who we are, this is what we do. If you got a problem with us, come take a look and get to know who we really are. The kink community is the opposite. The kink community is another community that is stigmatized and is disliked. And they, a lot of their cons, the location of them is not released to the public. It is not up on the website. And it causes some problems too, because they usually only release the location of the hotel about 3 or 4 days in advance. If you book the hotel through the conference website. Okay, talk a little louder. My God, you're asking me to talk louder. 8 a.m. I'm usually like the biggest loudmouth in the room. If you book your ticket through the website, you know, and you end up getting a room, you obviously know where the con is. But if you don't, they release the location of the con about 3 or 4 days in advance. And the problem with this is people with disabilities, they can't just automatically go to the con people and be like, hey, here are my very specific unique needs. Here's what I need from a hotel to be able to stay there. Can this hotel handle it? Because, I mean, as we all know, cons are run by volunteers and everyone has enough on their table. And it's like, no, you guys need to release the location of the con ahead of time so that people with disabilities can research the hotel for themselves and find out if that works for them. And they can't. But they can't because these cons keep their location secret. They never, ever, 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 ever record the talks, ever. Which is a pain, which means that if there are two talks you want to see at the exact same time, you have to choose. You can't just do like I do at Hope and be like, oh, I'm going to miss all the talks and catch them later because I'm too busy hanging out with my friends and doing awesome things. You're SOL. You can't see that talk. You can talk to the people who did the talk afterwards. You can ask them if they have any notes. But you're out of luck. And it's very frustrating to me because I'm used to having the ability to... as someone on the IRC said, or working at the radio station to miss all the fun. The fun seems to come by the booth here, I've noticed. But, you know, you can't see the talks afterwards. People are very closeted. Like the hacker scene, lots of people go by pseudonyms. In the kink scene, I actually go by my real name. The hacker scene is the one place I don't use my real name. And I don't use my real name here because I chose long ago because I thought it'd be cool to have like an alter ego and to only go by it. And what's really interesting is there are people in the hacker scene who have known me for 10 years who still do not know my real name. And it's kind of interesting. I don't think the gentleman who's sitting next to me here, who I've been working with on scheduling the talk, knows my real name. He shakes his head no. You know, my close friends who are in the hacker scene obviously know my real name, but, you know, I've gone by a pseudonym here for 10 years, but it's more of an established identity at this point, at least on the internet, than my real name is. Yeah. I, quote, grew up on the internet in the day when, what, give out your real name? What, are you crazy? Of course you don't give out your real name on the internet. Nobody gives out their real name on the internet. On the internet, nobody knows you're a dog. One of those dealies, right? So this whole, like, Facebook requiring your real name BS and this whole people doing things and posting things under their real name is just, like, mind-boggling to me. Like, what? What are you doing? And then you wonder why your boss has a problem with... You put pictures of your crazy Friday night, and then you wonder why. Well, dummy, if you hadn't put in your real name, he wouldn't have been able to find you on the internet. To be fair, I don't believe that bosses should be able to fire you for what you do after work. You know, I'm a staunch advocate of, you know, that it should be enshrined in law that what you do after work is your own business, as long as what you're doing isn't going to affect, you know, your ability to do your job or could harm your job somehow, then... You know, that's your damn business. You want to go out and get trashed on Friday night and you're a teacher? Fine, I'm sorry. Are you trashed in front of the kids? Are you hurting the kids in any way? Nope, I don't care. You know, all this moralizing and stuff, especially in industries that don't matter, like what you do after work, drives me nuts. Anyways, want to throw that out there. But it's like, you know, what are you guys doing posting this stuff under your real name? You know, 20 years, you know, nothing ever disappears on the internet. Ever. It's always going to be there somewhere and someone can always download it. So, like, you know, think before you post, people. I don't think in the early days of the internet anyone expected this stuff to get archived. Anyone expected this stuff to last forever. But it does. Now, I'll be honest, I can't talk about the early days of the internet because my early days of the internet were 1996. I didn't have a computer at home. I wasn't online at home at my parents' house until the year 2000, was the year I graduated from high school. And even then, it was dial-up, because my parents live in the middle of the woods of Pennsylvania. My parents only were able to get high-speed internet, and by high-speed, let me tell you, it's medium-speed. It is not high-speed. I cannot, in good conscience, call that high-speed internet. But they only got that, I think, in the 2010s. I think it was 2011. Yeah, it was like... winter 2011 that they got that, like January winter, that they finally got that because it wasn't available in their area. I mean, they live in the woods. Their options were satellite or dial-up. And so, you know, I still know that as my sweetie put it, that electric screech mating call of two Motorola modems reaching out for hot coupling. You know, I still got to hear that as recently as 2011. Sorry, but the mic keeps moving. I need to stop touching it. As recently as 2011. But I was going somewhere with all this. This always happens to me on the radio. I apologize to you, faithful listeners. Please bear with me. But, like, you know, I wasn't really around in the true early days of the internet. But there was... where was I going? Oh, people. Somebody on the IRC channel is trying to mimic through, I guess, onomatopoeia, the sounds of a modem. Doo-doop, crunch, bing. So, I mean, there was that bing. It wasn't always there, but sometime it had that bing. I have this really cool file, actually, that it's an image file, but it shows, like, the waveform. Excuse me, postnasal drips drive me crazy today. It shows that waveform of what it looks like when you're dialing a modem, and it breaks apart the parts, and it tells you exactly what is being said and happening at that point in time, and it's hella cool. Oh my god, so neat. Let's see, I was talking about early days of the internet. What was I talking about before that? Come on, people on IRC, type faster. Tell me what I was talking about before that so I can go back. I know at one point I was talking about The Last Hope, which, yeah, going back to The Last Hope, it was sad. We thought we were going to lose the Hotel Pennsylvania, like, for realies. There is a reason that con had a funerary theme. It was beautifully executed, and I think that was actually Rob T. Firefly and Great Frequency that did a lot of the art and disabilities in attendance. Thank you. I will get back on that in a second. There was a... it was a funerary theme, and they did a lovely job of doing the art all over the con for that. Not just they did some paintings, but they had little like shrines set up with little candles. I think I still have one of those little LED candles. That was back in the day when the LED candles were totes new, right? My current house is covered in them, but that was the day where they were like totes new, and like that was my first LED candle, and it was kind of cool. And somewhere I think I still have that thing, and I think if I put a battery in, it still works. And that little flicker, I remember. It was sad. We really thought this might be the end. And we had grown to love it so much. And a number of us were so dedicated that we're like, we don't care if we have to bring a card table and stick it on top of the rubble and slap a little sign on it that says hope. And anybody who wants to come can come to that card table and sit and talk and have our hope. And we were going to do that. And like, I was, you know, it never panned out this way, but I was hoping to be one of the people who, you know, would help make that happen if it needed to happen, because I love this con. I go to two hacker cons. I go to this one, and sometimes I go to ShmooCon. I usually, because screw that whole ticket gambling nonsense. That is not the hacker way. I'm sorry, guys. Too many of these hacker cons are losing their sight of what I feel, I'll be straight up, to be the true hacker way. And I hate to use that word true, because in the kink community, oh, that's what I was talking about, the similarities and differences between the kink community. In the kink community, there is way too much emphasis on, or people who try to emphasize, well, that's not what a true submissive would do, or, well, true dominance would never, and it's BS. You know, true submissives are submissives, and true dominance are dominance. And, you know, there is no such thing as this people joke about the one true way or one true way, you know. And so, like, you know, I hate to talk about true hacking, but to me it's about cooperation and sharing and teaching. And to me, that whole ticket raffle thing goes against the entire idea of, to me, that's like, well, let's see how good of a hacker you are, you know, because the people who are the best hackers are going to hack their way in and get the tickets first. And everyone else just gets to beat each other up in a mad scramble for tickets. And they sell out in 2 seconds. And mentoring. Yeah, I like that. You know, I didn't have a mentor. And to this day, I would love to have a mentor. Like, I didn't get to learn. One of the reasons I fell out of tech hacking is because I didn't have a mentor. That whole, you know, read the fucking manual bullshit really pisses me off, because some of us learned better by hands-on. I'm one of those people who learned better by hands-on. Plus, the manuals are freaking dry. Let me talk a little bit about how I got into tech. I got into tech in 1997, six, something like that. Parents were poor, but when I entered high school, gave me a computer for Christmas. Even though it was 1990, it was Christmas 1996. Even though at that point the Pentiums were the new hotness and Windows 95 was the new hotness, I got an old 386, an old IBM clone 386/16. Swan was the brand name, and it ran DOS 3.3. And gosh darn it, we liked it. No, I do love DOS. DOS is a soft spot in my heart to this day because of it. But that's what I had, the little dot matrix printer and a 5 1/4 inch floppy drive. I didn't even have a 3.5. I didn't have a 3.5 drive. And it was a EGA screen. It wasn't even a VGA screen. Someone still uses DOS. Hey, Fun Socks, what version of DOS do you run? 6 or 2 or whatever? I'm curious. Let me know. I was watching this YouTube channel with all these interesting old viruses, and you could watch their payloads. It was the only time I'm watching YouTube. And I don't know what FreeDOS is. I'll have to look that up later. 6.22. Or maybe I do, and it's just really early. But, oh, man, there was this YouTube channel. It was the only time I've ever had a YouTube ad that I was actually interested in watching what they were advertising at me. But there's this YouTube channel with all these really cool, like, old virus videos. Like, you get to watch your payloads and shit. It's so cool. Go check it out. But that's, you know, I had that computer, and, you know, everyone else was running, like, you know, at school I'd run the new Pentium Hotness, but at home I'd run the new print shop, literally, the new print shop, loved that thing, and this little DOS Shelly type thing, and oh, this computer had Windows 3.0, not 3.1, 3.0, it couldn't run 3.1. And I mean, this was how I got into computing. And because I got into computing with a, you know, substandard computer at the time, I went to my local library, in tiny little town library, and the Amelia Given Library in Mount Holly, Pennsylvania. Look it up. It's actually beautiful architecture, and has some intricate woodwork that is some of the finest examples of that specific kind of woodwork and left in the United States to this day, actually. But I would go there, and the computer books that they had were the Dummy series. So I read like every single last Computer Dummies book that they had, and they're actually really good information. They're written by, industry people, but they're presented in a very entertaining and interesting light. And they have sections like, if you want the really nerdy stuff, read this, and I, ate that up with a spoon. But when you go from learning about tech in a way like that, and then the next step is just somebody RTFMing you and putting a manual or a very blandly written computer book in your lap, because I went from basically reading those books to trying to go to college for computers, and I just, it was brutal. The books aren't written in an interesting fashion. Maybe they are now, but they weren't then in the year 2000. And there was kind of this unspoken thing of the, if you really love computers, you will find this interesting anyways, and you will read this anyways, because that means you really love computers, and if you don't, then you're not really dedicated to it. Fun stuff. Yeah, they did. They had great cartoons, actually. But, and there was this unspoken thing, and it's just like, and there was this whole RTFM kind of mentality about it, and I don't learn that way. I can learn that way, but if I want to learn and I want it to be most rewarding, it's learning with another person. It's learning with a mentor. It's having someone show me something, and then my brain leaps three steps ahead, and I figure it out before they tell me, and it's like, oh my God, it's amazing. And it's so exciting. It's the excitement of exploring and, like, discovering something new. And just the books don't have that. And they never did. And that the whole mentality, the whole RTFM mentality is really frustrating, because, yeah, I'm all about, the mentoring part. So, I think it's really important. And that's kind of why I dropped out of tech hacking, is because I never found anyone to teach me how to hack. They just all expected me to RTFM. And I didn't exactly know what books to start with. I didn't know where to begin. So most of the books I read were more on the social end of things, learning about other hackers. I think I read one of Kevin Mitnick's books at one point. And I didn't know where to begin. And to this day, I still don't. I don't know if there's a good 101 on, hacking things. And then you have to ask, what kind of hacking do you want to do? Especially because, back then, hacking was like breaking into boxes, writing code, phone freaking, which it's funny, I was waxing poetic to my sweetie last night about phone freaking some of the stuff I'd done back in the day, because I hadn't done that much, but I always enjoyed what I did, and I'd love to get back into that again. Oh man, butt sets. Let's talk about the things we did with butt sets, or probably the things I shouldn't be talking about doing with butt sets, because we probably shouldn't have been doing them. Hey! But, that's it. Nowadays, you've got the whole 3D printing revolution, you've got all the microcontroller revolution. We didn't have... God, I feel old now. We didn't have any of that back then. We didn't. It's true. I mean, Elix would bring some kind of cool piece of phone thing and talk really excitedly at the Maryland 2600 meetings. I mean, that's what we had. We didn't have the thing. Hackerspace. What's a hackerspace? We didn't know. We didn't have hackerspaces then. So, it was different then, and I'm not going to say it was better or worse, but it was different. In fact, I don't know, I think it's better in some ways today. You have hackerspaces, you have people doing outreach. There are amazing people, like Mitch Altman, who sits for an entire weekend with a smile on his face. He's the cheeriest person I've ever met in my life. I love him. I have, like, the biggest crush on that guy. He's so nice. he may have his issues outside of that, which I don't know him that well, but he sits there for a weekend, and he teaches complete beginners how to solder out of the goodness of his heart, because he loves what he does, and he loves to teach it. And to me, that's the real hacker spirit and hacker way. It's somebody who loves whatever it is that they do, and they get excited about it, and they're just so excited about it. They've got to share it with other people. And these other people come who are excited about their things, and they come up with you, and I guess it's a quote. I think there was Neil deGrasse Tyson. You know, run up to people on the street and be like, "Hey, have you seen this?" And to me, that's what the hacker spirit is about. It's about coming together, learning things, sharing things, exploring things, trying new things. It's not about computers. He said it never has been. I've gone on record plenty of times as being like, you can hack anything. It's not about the tech. It's about the way you approach the world, the creativity and the mindset. And I summed up with creativity and, it wasn't passion, it was, I forget what the other word is, it began with a C, but creativity and passion. And people who have that, regardless of what field they have it in, are the kind of people I like to surround myself in my life. I was talking with my sweetie who couldn't make it, and I was like, hey, take a read of the description of hacker on the website for this year. It's on the FAQ, and I really liked it, and he read it, and I'm like, that kind of sounds like you. He's like, that does sound a lot like me, actually. His thing is he writes. He's a writer. I mean, that's not what he does for a living right now. We're trying to get him a job doing that. But more than being a writer, he's an editor. His passion in life, his greatest desire is to be a filter for people's ideas, to condense things down, to elucidate. Excuse me. I have this frog right in my throat. It's driving me crazy. Hold on a second. His greatest passion is to take other people's ideas, or his own, and to condense them down into their most distilled and potent form. And he has a passion for this, and he's good at it. I can blah, 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 blah at you for 50 minutes now, and he could probably sum it up in 3 sentences. Because that's just how he rolls. And he's amazing at it, and he's spending his time working as a mattress salesman right now. So... somebody on the IRC chan says, a lot of my friends hear the word hacker and immediately think of people who break into their computers and steal data, and it's hard to burst that particular bubble. I agree completely, because that is the only thing that society is portraying us as, and I don't know what we need to do to get out there to spread the word that I do put that under hacker. I'm, you know, black hat or white hat, you know, good or bad, it's a tool. I'm not one of those people who are like, those aren't hackers, those are crackers. Fuck it, you know, we're all kind of doing this shit together. Some people do good with it, some people do bad with it, some people are just people, and excuse me. But I wish we could get the word out. I wish society could see other forms of hackers more. But I think they're starting to cover that more with the whole 3D printing revolution and with the whole microcontroller thing and with the things that people are doing with computers these days astound and amaze me. I yesterday looked at a 3D printed corset with pieces in it that were controlled by a microcontroller that could go translucent or transparent, which could go, you know, fuzzy and let the light through, or completely clear. And it's a special material, and it's controlled by a computer. And the data that made it do that was her data from walking around Lower Manhattan. And the corset, the parts of the corset were abstractly representative of the parts of Lower Manhattan. And it read this old data from her walking around Lower Manhattan. And when she was in a place or not in a place, it turned on or off accordingly. This is crazy madness stuff. What is this stuff? It's not bad. It's amazing. Like, who does this? The mind of the person who came. What would make you think of that? I am not that creative. That's amazing. And the way that people are controlling everything with their smartphones these days, just, and the way that that makes it easier for people with all sorts of disabilities to live their lives to their fullest is just, I mean, I remember the weight. I can feel the weight in my arms of my old 386, of that steel case, and how heavy that was. And I remember that it had a 30 meg hard drive that I had double spaced up to 60, don't ever run Norton. Don't ever run Norton disk check on your double space disk because it marks every sector as bad. I did that, and I had half of my disk with the turbo button. Nice. Someone says they remember their 88 with the turbo button. Nice. It marks every sector bad, and I had to live with half my hard disk for a while until I figured out how to do that. And my way of doing that, getting it back, was I found that there was a command line program that changed one sector at a time, and I didn't have the batch file or QBasic that I needed, because high school taught me QBasic. Everyone else learned C++ in high school. I learned QBasic, and it was just because my high school was behind at the time, unfortunately. It's not that they didn't have QBasic at the time, or not that they didn't have C++ at the time. But I asked my friend who knew some QBasic, and she taught me how to write a little file that I could put in a bottom sector number and a top sector number, and it just ran that program over and over again, one sector at a time, fixing it. And that's how I fixed my damn hard drive. I guess it was kind of hackery. But, I remember that computer. I remember how heavy it felt in my arms. And now I have an iPhone, and thank you too much to my housemate, who was supposed to come to the con, who can't because she's trying to get her startup going. Who was definitely supposed to be here. Sweetie, you're definitely missed. I wish you were here. I think you'd have a great time. A little overwhelmed because you're very much an introvert. You'd have a great time. But she actually paid for my room, so thank you. You know, she got me my iPhone for my birthday this year because I couldn't afford one because I'm on disability now. And you know, money is tight, but she was very kind. She got me an iPhone for my birthday. And just what I can do with that. I had an iPod Touch previously. Let me tell you, smartphone, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I love having a data plan. I love having a smartphone. Holy balls. But, yeah, I was probably like one of the last people on earth who didn't have one, I swear. But just, I look at my phone, and I hold my phone up, and I know its storage capacity, and I know that the OS on that takes up how much money more time space than that first hard drive that I had, and I think, you know, how far I've come. I think of my grandparents, actually. My grandparents, who are now 94, and my grandmother, who is going to turn 92, on the 31st, so happy birthday, Mima. And all the I've seen so much changes in technology in the past 10 years, from the past 15 years. They've lived 94 years. How much technology have they seen change? Yeah, okay, yes, I have an iPhone, yes, thank you very much. I'm an Apple person, sorry, you're gonna have to deal with it, folks. But where is it gonna go? People are doing things with computers that I'm going to use this word, and I don't want to offend anybody, are almost frivolous. And I don't mean that in a bad way. We have tech to the point now that we can do, and I don't just mean like cat memes, because yeah, cat memes, although I'm a Doge fan, personally. I mean, to make that corset, we are using tech to make art now. And I don't just mean like drawings on a computer. I mean, we're using tech, we're entering a world, it's the whole STEAM thing, you know, instead of STEM, the A for the art in there, where art and tech are intertwined for some folks, and it's cool shit, and it's kind of mind-blowing for me, and I have no idea where we're going to go with tech in the future. I couldn't tell you. I'm looking forward to being there, though. I'm glad to be there. You know, there's a lot of places where the world needs to improve, and treatment for mental illness and more research for mental illness, especially in ways of things that aren't necessarily going to be, you know, profitable to the businesses, because, you know, I do believe that helping people is more important than making money. That makes me a damn dirty socialist, so be it, you know. But tech has just gone places in the past, even for the past 10 years. I mean, you know, we didn't have I have to remind myself, we didn't have the iPhone when I went to my first Hope. Hope number 5, there was no iPhone. And there wasn't 3/4 of the stuff that we have now. And it's just how much it's changed even in the past 10 years of being in the hacker scene. But what's kind of amazing about all this is that the hacker spirit stays the same. the people stay the same. I noticed there were more women here yesterday, or people that I would read as women, because I see other genders outside the gender binary. But there are a lot more people that I would read as women here, and I'm sure there were lots of different types of genderqueer people too. And there are some changes. There are kids running around. Like, I think we had a few kids running around at first, but there are kids running around, which is great. And the tech has changed, the people stay the same. And the hacker spirit goes on, and it stays the same too. And we need to cultivate that in the next generation. And I don't even necessarily mean our children. I mean the people entering the hacker scene now. I mean we need to cultivate that and bring it to the world. The spirit that we have, the one of creativity and the one of excitement, the one of passion. Because that, to me, is where the true hacker spirit lies. And it's amazing. I call me a sap. Part of having borderline personality disorder is we feel things stronger than most people, which means that while I have extreme mood swings and feel awful for no good reason whatsoever, and you know, beat myself up for no good reason because we also have very low self-esteem, it also means that I have moments of joy, moments of exhilaration, moments of awe that are deeper and stronger than other people. So my awe at the hacker spirits is deep and strong, and it inspires me. I see the people around me who do amazing things, and I wish that I could do amazing things. I see them create in ways that I'm just not wired to create, and it makes me wish I could create. My sweetie wrote some poetry. I had him sit down and redo his resume into a skills-based resume, because that was the best format for, you know, most for what he should be doing, what he's looking for. And I read his little self-summary, and it was good, but I'm like, honey, I would like you to go and rewrite that. Just, you know, humor me. Humor me and let me see what you can come up with. And he writes a poem. On his resume, he wrote a poem about how he wants to be a filter. And it was beautiful. And I look at him, and this is before we got together. That was the moment I fell in love with him, actually. I read this beautiful poem, and I learned that this friend of mine who I'd had for a year had all these depths I had never seen before, that I had no idea existed. And his passion for words and language and the way they work together, and his passion for distilling ideas, for exploring them, trying them out and discussing them with others and coming up with new ones and having the old ones die out is just unparalleled. And it really shows me there are hackers everywhere. Anybody in the world that I'd ever want to get to know and love is a hacker, even if they're not a hacker by name. And it is that we need to get out. We need to spread the word and let people know that you are a hacker too. You are already a hacker. And here's a whole community of people who would love to have you and see you and explore and create and be excited with you. And I'm telling, I'm crying now. That's so sweet. Thank you so much to everybody who's been talking to us on IRC. We're so glad you're so glad you're here and you've joined us. The time right now is the time right now local at Radio Statler in New York City is 9:02 a.m. on Saturday morning. And this has been a fireside chat with Cable Flame. I'm really glad you had me here today. I'm really glad to talk to Radio Statler. And I hope you all have a lovely day and enjoy whatever show is up next.
So, listeners, I hope you enjoyed Cable Flame's wonderful fireside chat. We love having her here. We're so excited that she gets to come, that she came back. I'm hoping that next con, she will be able to join us again. She's shaking her head vigorously and says, always. So that's very exciting. We